Supports the work of various ATC technology and planning committees and assists in the development of ATS standards and related documents. He currently serves as Secretary of Technology and Standards Group and is Secretary of the Planning Committee and is closely involved in working with relating educational programs. Mr. Whitaker is a fellow of the Society of Broadcast Engineers. I know that because I was able to give him his CPBE pen when I worked at the SBE. And he is a fellow of the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. Mr. Whitaker is an author and editor of more than 30 books of technical topics, including the Standard Handbook of Video and Television Engineering, the 4th edition, the NAB Engineering Handbook, the 9th edition, DTV Handbook 3rd Edition, and the Electronics Handbook of the 2nd Edition. Prior to joining the ATSC, Mr. Whitaker headed the publishing company Technical Press based in Morgan Hill, California. He has served on the board of the SBE and vice president of the Society of Broadcast Engineers. It is my privilege to introduce to you Mr. Jerry Whitaker.
We've got a lot of ground to cover. The previous discussion on audio, I'll touch on that in a little bit, because we do have some audio initiatives underway. And, of course, the DTV transition is coming up ever so quickly. I think it will be entirely smooth. February 18th will go without a hitch, just in case I'm stocking up on bottled water and canned tuna in the event that things go south. At any rate, I'm going to try and cover a fair amount of distance in the next 45 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about ATSC, give you an overview, look at some DTV standards, some of the key ones that you are no doubt quite familiar with. We'll look at some audio initiatives, as I mentioned, the ATSC strategic plan, which is guiding work going forward, ATSC mobile and handheld, which I'm sure many of you have heard about, the ATSC non-real-time project, and the status of the transition. First of all, ATSC, if you're unfamiliar, it's hard to imagine, but I'll go over it in the event, is a standards development organization dedicated to digital television. It was founded in 1983, and that would make us, 25 years old. Focused on terrestrial digital television broadcasting. ATSC is an open due process organization. That means our work is open to all with a direct and material interest in the work. All standards and recommended practices and informational documents are available on our website at no charge. The ATSC was founded by the Consumer Electronics Association, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, the National Association of Broadcasters, the National Telecommunications Association, and the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. As of today, we have something higher than 195 members, and it's a broad cross-industry representation, and I'll get to the importance of that in a little bit. But suffice to say, it covers broadcasters, cable, satellite, motion picture, consumer electronics, computer, automotive, and professional equipment manufacturers. ATSC is also quite international in scope. The ATSC DTV standard has been adopted by the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Argentina, Honduras, and South Korea. The board of directors is led by Glenn Reitmeier from NBC Universal, who is the chair. The other board members are listed here. I'll point out Wayne Luplow from Zenith, who will do a paper this afternoon after lunch on ATSC MH. The ATSC staff is led by Mark Richer, who is the president. I serve as VP of Standards Development. The organization, not to get into too much internal minutia, is run by the board, which is elected by the members. There are two main groups we'll talk about, and this is where the work begins and ends, first in the planning committee and then in the Standards and Technology Group, also known as TSG. Now, I want to talk about the approval process because it's very important. ATSC does voluntary standards. Governments of some governments have chosen to enact ATSC standards into law. The FCC obviously has done that, but we do voluntary standards. And the approval process is three-step. First, the specialist group, then the technology and standards group, and finally, the full ATSC membership. The key point in this graph is that any standard or recommended practice begins as a working draft. And that's done in the specialist group level, where a large number of individuals, typically with expertise in the technology, will get together and draft a document. At that point, it can move forward to a proposed standard or candidate standard by vote of the technology and standards group, and ultimately as a standard after approval by the membership. And at each step, we require consensus or two-thirds approval. And that's key because there's very little work that ATSE does that's a pure play in that it only affects broadcasters. More often than not, when we work on a standard, there's a broadcast element. It also impacts the production community, and it also impacts the receiver community and the vendors that serve all of those. And so from that standpoint, it's very important to have all of those people together and on board. TSG develops and recommends voluntary international technical standards for the distribution of television programs to the public using advanced television technology. Now, those technologies may be improvements to current systems or entirely new systems. In the case of ATSEMH, I think it's a little of both. TSG is led by John Henderson, representing the Consumer Electronics Association as chair. Rich Chernock from Triveni Digital is the vice chair, service secretary. There are a number of active specialist groups that are listed here. You'll see they're largely broken down by technologies. We will look in particular at TSGS4 and TSGS13. We'll get to those later. The planning committee is the other side of the house, if you will. We have this digital technology, this digital TV system. Now, what can we do with it from the business standpoint? And so it's the planning committee's work to consider business opportunities with a focus on applications that may be enabled by DTV standards. Graham Jones from NAB is the chair. Jim Kutzner from PBS is the vice chair. I serve as secretary. There are several working groups within the planning committee. We'll talk in particular about ATSC 2.0. So now a little more than a decade into the transition, I think we've learned a few things. Number one, quality counts. High definition is the killer app, and Dolby Digital 5.1 sound, surround sound is the killer audio app. Quality counts and quantity counts, multicasting, multiple HD TV, multiple SD TV rather, and HD plus SD. And also data is important. Enhanced and interactive services and program-related services and non-program-related services. So options are good. We can trade off, broadcasters can trade off, you guys can trade off increased number of services versus increased transmitted resolution. And you have options. You have data options, you have audio-video options, you have service options. Okay, let's look at some of the key standards. A52, the ATSC Digital Audio Compression Standard. EAC3 is the audio coding system used in the ATSC DTV standard. I would not call it an audio processing system. I don't believe it was ever designed to be an audio processing system, except that metadata components are built in that allow the program producer and the television station to control dialogue level, to put together, to manage dynamic range and so forth. When AC3 and dial norm in particular, since audio loudness has been quite an issue this morning, when dial norm is used correctly, the results are very satisfactory. Now, as I mentioned later on, ATSC has an initiative with regard to audio loudness, which continues to bedevil the industry. And it's not a single, there's not a single answer, and we'll get into that later. AC3 is widely used throughout the world, of course. The last I heard, there was 50 or 60 million Dolby Digital decoders out there. Revision B includes enhancements to AC3 that are designed to improve in performance and flexibility. That's known as enhanced AC3. A53 is the digital television standard. It is the core document for digital television, of course. It describes the key system characteristics of DTV. It's organized into six parts, as you can see here. A65, the Program and System Information Protocol, PSIP, of course, is mandated by the U.S., by the FCC for U.S. broadcasters. Primary features are it preserves channel branding, it allows navigation to and access to each of the services within the transport stream, it provides for a program guide, which is critically important these days, it gives the user information for browsing and selection, it conveys content and content advisory information, content and rating advisory information, and of course supports closed captioning. And there was a time, up until very recently, I think we had implementation issues with regard to PSIP. Various stations did a better job than others. I think we're coming to the point now where PSIP is getting pretty good. And one of the reasons is there are better tools, which we're talking about in a second. I want to call attention to A72, which describes the video system characteristics of AVC when used in the ATSC DTV system. AVC is also known as H.264, and it can provide high image quality with fewer bits than MPEG-2. Now, A72 was published about a month ago, I think. There are two parts, video coding and transport. A72 is intended for new services and countries that have not yet launched a DTV service. A76, the Programming and Metadata Communications Protocol, provides the means to integrate the various information sources that are needed to compile the key PSIP tables. Now, what A76 does, and I think there's product out there to support this now, certainly it's in development, is it takes the information from a number of sources. It could be your program information service, your automation system, your billing system, your on-air run, and automatically populates the PSIP tables so the information going out is both accurate and complete. A78 transport stream verification recommended practice. This is relatively new, and I think there's product out there to support it as well. It outlines a methodology for describing the transport stream conformance, and it does so in a tiered way. In the NTSC days, of course, it's pretty easy to know if you're on the air or not. There's either picture or sound, or there's no picture, no sound. With regard to the digital television system and the complexity of the transport stream, you may have a situation where you're technically not in compliance, but the end effect for most receivers most of the time is benign and no one would know. On the other hand, you could have a flaw in the transport stream, in the makeup of the transport stream, that for all intents and purposes puts you off the air. Now, it would be it's important to know if you're in that category or you're in the technically non-conformant, but it really doesn't make any difference from the standpoint of the viewer range. So there's a gradation there of about 4 or 5 points. A82, the Automatic Transmitter Power Control Data Return Link Standard, that was published earlier this year. This work was done in TSGS3, which is the specialist group on digital ENG led by Dean Erickson, representing SBE. Now, the A82 describes the mechanism for controlling BAS transmitters, that is to say the power output. And the idea is to feed back to the transmitter a metric on the received level, the received signal level. And if you need to raise the power, then the transmitter will raise power. If, on the other hand, you can knock the power down by 3 dB or 6 dB, then obviously that helps everyone in the market because the RF levels are reduced. A101, Advanced Common Application Platformer, is our interactive TV specification. It's based on Java and Java TV code. It's a method of delivering OCAP applications to cable MSOs through the affiliates. And we've done some tests, interoperability tests. Those have been completed with some good results. The next step is a field trial. And an update to A101 has been developed, ballot authorized by TSG. That will go out probably next week. So there's a lot of things you can do with interactive television. Here's some examples. Games, e-commerce, commercials, and so forth. And also news, sports, weather, that sort of thing. TSGS6 is the specialist group on audio and video coding. And about a year, maybe 2 years ago, a group was formed within that specialist group to study audio loudness issues. It's chaired by Jim Starzynski from NBC Universal, wide participation from the ATSC membership, and other interests. And we have gone out of our way to invite, of course, members to participate, but also organizations that are not members. And if anyone in this room wants to participate in that group, send me an email and we'll make it so. Anyway, the scope of the S6-3 work is to study the audio loudness issue, see what can be done about it, and quantify it, and then to write a recommended practice that gives guidance to broadcasters and perhaps others. Now, work on that draft RP is underway. Now, this is a long effort, and we've got some really smart people involved in this. First of all of the networks are involved. Many manufacturers, vendors are involved. Many group stations are involved. And we have telco providers involved. We have satellite providers involved. So it's not just, you know, it's not just an ATSC thing from the standpoint of terrestrial television. So that work is underway. One of the things, there are a lot of things they found, but one of the things they found very early on is that it's not just one thing, and it begins at the point of production and it ends at the receiver, and there's an element that ATSC can influence, and that's the transmission element, but even this, something as seemingly benign as what is the monitor level in the room where the mix for a program or commercial is being done can have a major impact on how that commercial or that episodic television will play in play with others on the air. It's a very complicated issue. The other thing is lip sync. Lip sync's been with us for a while, and it doesn't seem to want to go away. John Henderson, who, as I mentioned, is the chair of TSG and represents the Consumer Electronics Association, is heading up this group. There's there again wide participation, not just from ATSC, but a number of outside organizations. There's some data available from third parties. We're looking at that, and they're examining a number of sources of potential lip sync, which may go back all the way to MPEG-2, the structure of MPEG-2. CEA has established a working group focused on synchronization, so work is happening. Now, just for the record, in case we forget, these are non-trivial problems. There is no one solution. They took time to create, and yes, they will take time to fix. Let's talk about the ATSC strategic plan developed by the board a couple of years ago and recently updated. The plan takes into account the likely progression of technology over the next, say, 5 years. And the board believes that ATSC should focus on comprehensive solutions that provide compelling services. So rather than go work on a piece of a data broadcast standard that would give us the capability to support interactive services, let's instead focus on all of what data broadcast could be and pull it together. The major recommendations are to focus on documentation of service levels that group those standards together, some of which already exist and some of which may need to be created, either by ATSC or someone else, to form a logical bundling of features. And three are listed here: ATSC 2.0, which would be new services for the conventional fixed DTV receiving environment, ATSC MH, which we'll talk about in some detail later, and development of non-real-time services. So about ATSC 2.0, the concept here, I suppose it's as much packaging as it is technology, but it's a packaging of technology. That's why we're involved. ATSC 2.0 might include, for example, advanced audio-video codecs, interactive services, non-real-time services. The planning committee is developing a set of specifications, and ATSC 2.0, the plan here is that what ATSC would do in this work is specify the transmission elements of these services. Now, the planning committee during the summer conducted a poll of features that our members would like to see in a packaged in a 2.0 ensemble, if you will. And here's the top eight. I guess that's all that would fit on the slide. Advanced audio codec, we have that satisfied with A72. Non-real-time services, that's under development in S13-1. We'll talk about that. Advanced audio codec, we have EAC3 on the books. AFD and bar data, active format display and bar data. Boy, we're pushing as hard as we can to get active format display, and CEA is pushing it, and S&PTE is pushing it. That's a really important thing. I wish I could tell you that, you know, it was going to, you know, that all the stars were going to align and it was going to happen right away, but all of the pieces are, all of the elements are coming together. Everybody involved is working to make it happen. Transmission side reception enhancements, that would be such as, you know, distributed transmission, single frequency networks, that sort of thing. Interactive capabilities, we have ACAP. Defined return path for interactive services, we have a data broadcast standard for that. Software download, we have a data broadcast standard for that. So some of this is inventing new stuff. Some of ATSC 2.0 is simply putting these things together that already exist. Say this would be a compelling package of services. So going forward, we think the broadcast industry must leverage its local content, brand, and sales contacts, and its untethered nature. After all, TV was cool way before wireless was cool. So we want to target devices that move, in addition to ones that stay put in the living room, of course. And that would include laptop computers, handheld video display devices, backseat card displays and so forth, and cell phones. And again, it comes back to options, and options are good. Number of services versus transmitted resolution. And then over that, we lay mobile handheld versus fixed, and non-real-time versus real-time. So let's talk about ATSC-MH. As I'm sure all of you know, and Wayne Luplow will talk about in some detail the technology behind this, ATSC is developing a standard for delivery of real-time and non-real-time services to mobile and handheld devices. We call it ATSC-MH. The services will be carried in the DTV broadcast stream, the emitted stream, and it will be backward compatible. The presence of these services will not preclude or prevent operation of current ATSC services in the same RF channel or have any adverse impact on legacy receiving equipment. And of course, that's a key thing because right now there's tens of millions, maybe 100 million receivers in the market that are DTV integrated receivers that have ATSC tuners. You can't disenfranchise any of those, and broadcasters, of course, are not going to risk somebody not being able to see their primetime program, and so it's got to be backward compatible, and a lot of work goes into making sure that that's the case. Now, the other thing you'll read into that sentence is that the footprint, the minimum footprint for ATSC-MH has to be small enough so that you broadcasters can transmit ATSC-MH and a high-definition program, key element. The standard will specify the physical layer. It'll specify the transport, signaling, and announcement, and other parameters, audio, video, data essence, metadata, and so forth. And it will reference the standards of other organizations. Indeed, it does. That fosters interoperability. It also reduces the time to development. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. Applications, there are a lot of them. You can think of the obvious ones, free over-the-air, advertiser-supported television. Maybe it's a simulcast of your a main channel. Maybe it's a particular program. It could also be non-real-time content for later playback. Let's say you want to loop on on a non-real-time server to mobile devices, the 15 minutes worth of local news or the traffic report or whatever, and so someone walking around with some sort of mobile device, it's nice that your news is on at 6 o'clock and the weather comes on at 12 minutes past the hour, but someone who's walking around from one meeting to another might just want to know what is the weather, and that doesn't need to be real time off of your station. That can be cached, and as we get to in a minute, caching is practical because memory is real cheap. Okay, so video on demand, pay-per-view, et cetera, interactive, real-time navigation for data, for in-vehicle data use is another interesting concept. So last year, TSG formed the specialist group on mobile and handheld. It's led by Mark Aiken from Sinclair Broadcast Group. Dan Borowitz from Ion Media is the vice chair. I serve as secretary. And you may know that last year, a request for proposals was sent out. and we received 10 or so, some to, addressed particular elements of the of a MH system, some narrowly focused on a given piece of the technology. Others were far more broad in concept. In any event, it came to be that that we're developing the standard and indeed have made considerable progress in that regard, which I'll talk about in a minute. The work plan is based on the premise that broadcasters would like to announce new mobile and handheld services by February 2009. We take it away with one hand and we give it with the other. That's kind of the idea. Now, the work in TSGS-4 has been divided into four main groups. There's the physical layer, the management layer, the presentation layer, and the systems layer. The physical layer encompasses the backward-compatible additions to the DTV emission to facilitate mobile and handheld. It's led by Michael Dorr of Coherent Logic, and Bruce Franca of MSTV is the vice chair. The management layer includes signaling, announcement, file delivery, and other functions such as conditional access and content protection. And boy, there's a lot of work that's involved in this part. That may be a surprise, but that's a lot of invention that goes on there. Of course, there was on the physical layer as well. The management layer group is led by Rich Chernock, who I'm sure many of you know. He's done a lot of seminars like these from Triveni, and Alan Moskowitz of Mobi TV is vice chair. The presentation layer focuses on what it sounds like, the audio-video components. S4.3 is led by Brett Jenkins from Ion Media as chair, and Dax Tricotti of Neural Audio as vice chair. This puts the stack together. I won't get into any of the details other than to point out that the system layer group works among these three layers, presentation, management, physical, to make sure that they talk to each other, they work from one to the other, and you might characterize it as that there are proper impedance matches from one layer to the next. A153, and a tip of the hat to A53, is the document number for the ATSC MH evolving standard. It is divided into 8 parts, as you can see here. And this is a kind of a graphical representation. It's a bit of an eye chart. But I'll just point out the bottom, 8 VSB RF, that's A53. Part 1 of A153 is an overall system view. Part 2 is the physical layer. Part 3 is the signaling layer. Part 4 is service guide. Part 5, RME, rich media environment, applications layer. Part 6 is... let's see, where is 6? Oh, that would be service protection. Part 7, AVC, video coding, and part 8, audio HEAAC version 2. So TSG on September 25th authorized a letter ballot on A153 parts 1 through 8 as a candidate standard for a period of time ending 20 May 2009. I'll get into what a candidate standard is and why that's important in a couple of minutes or in a couple of slides. The ballot went out 2 days ago. It closes in late November. And this is one of your callback to that, to the chart where I showed the evolution of a standard. These documents have now gone beyond the specialist group and the TSG voting, and the path for this will be working draft, candidate standard, proposed standard, standard. So that's the plan. Now, a candidate standard is essentially a call for input from not only from ATSC members, but from anyone. Once the document set is approved as a candidate standard, it'll be on the public website, atsc.org. Anyone can download it. Anyone can do trial implementations. And indeed, a number of member companies are already thinking about the steps that they may be able to take to do implementations, not only to make sure that all of the system elements work, but also, and equally important, is the idea of a standard is that in this one publication, someone without knowledge, without other knowledge of the system, could take the information contained therein in that document and build something that would work. And so from that standpoint, it's important to make sure that the documentation is complete and understandable and so forth. Now, some of your member companies may be a member of OMVC, OMBC, if you're unfamiliar with it, is an alliance of U.S. commercial and public broadcasters representing more than 800 television stations. And they're very much in support of developing mobile television. OMVC sponsored an independent demonstration of viability earlier this year. The goal of that was to ensure that the technical proposals under consideration were viable, could be deployed to make a service that worked under real-world conditions. And OMVC has also announced plans to participate in trial implementations of ATS-CMH as the standard moves forward. Any of you who went to the NAB or CES conventions the last 2 years will recognize the vans that we're driving around. I expect we'll see another one or two at CES, certainly more demonstrations. And so this thing is moving forward. And with any luck, like I mentioned, we'll have the candidate standard approved in late November. So stay tuned. There are, of course, advantages and challenges with regard to ATS-CMH. The advantages include that broadcasters already have the spectrum, the major investment in digital television has already been made, and there is a strong brand name in the local markets broadcasters have. Now, the challenges are building out single frequency networks as needed. It's likely they'll be required, certainly in some instances. I think a lot of stations are planning to put ATS-CMH on the air when they can and see what coverage issues, if any, they need to address. The other big challenge is managing the use of bits. And this will become more important because bits are becoming very expensive because there's more than you can do with them than provide just a single program feed. We're looking, of course, at a number of receiver manufacturers. We're looking at a number of form factors, handheld entertainment devices, laptop computers, mobile phones. And, of course, in the vehicle, there's interesting possibilities as well. Navigation, video audio systems. And the beauty of being in a vehicle is you have essentially no power restriction. Because you've got tons of power available. You've got a lot of space, usually, to work with. You could even put diversity antennas up if you needed to. So the vehicular integration, and you've got a GPS system, usually, so you can imagine some interesting concepts. Let's talk about non-real time for a second. Now, of course, when you stop and think about it, most broadcast programming really doesn't need to be delivered in real time. And consumers have an increasing desire for what they want, when they want, how they want it. And technologies such as flash drives and hard drives that are frightfully powerful and inexpensive have kind of changed the equation where you can put hard drives in or enormous amounts of memory in devices now that would be totally impractical, would have been totally impractical even just a few years ago. So these are opening some new opportunities. TSG has formed a group within S13, which is the Data Broadcast Specialist Group, to develop a non-real-time service that, again, is backward compatible. And so work there is progressing. There are a number of service scenarios that have been identified for non-real-time offerings, such as news, weather, traffic, sports, long-form entertainment programming, telescoping ads, targeted advertising, downloaded games, downloaded music, downloaded web content, so forth. Real quickly, let's look at the status of the transition. Last time I checked, 1,631 stations are on the air in 211 markets. I think that's everybody, or certainly everyone who counts. The DTV Transition Act, February 17, 2009, is coming up quickly, and the government will get back channels 52 through 69. To use for useful purposes. And of course, with regard to broadcasting, I think no one would argue that HD is the killer app, and everyone is going there. And it is everywhere. It's late night, it's episodic television, it's specials, it's sports news, and it's local news. And it's not just HD TV, it's HD plus multiple standard definition services. Here's Weather Plus. Public stations, of course, have been doing this for some time, and local broadcasters and groups are also doing HD and multiple SD services. And there's some new antenna concepts out there that are rather intriguing. The picture frame on the left there is a picture frame, but it's also an antenna. CEA 909, the smart antenna interface, is a really cool technology that that there's some product out there. Of course, that's a standardized interface that allows the receiver in concert with the antenna to optimize the antenna for any given characteristic for a channel. Very cool stuff. There's laptop TV built in and with, you know, USB dongles, small handheld receivers, and the digital to analog conversion program, which seems to be going pretty well. And of course, the coupons are out there, two per household, maximum $1.5 billion for the coupon program. You know, that seemed like a lot of money before. They were talking about $700 billion for, you know, the banks, so maybe $1.5 billion isn't so much after all. But that's moving along nicely. And of course, unlike the old days, you can't just take your old TV set and toss it in the trash. MyGreenElectronics.org, and there are others, so don't let your folks just set the TV out by the driveway on Tuesday morning, because nobody's going to take it from them. So to wrap up, the ATSC developed a strategic plan in 2006 and recently updated. The ATSC is in the process of launching a second wave of major standards. The first wave was intended to replace analog TV broadcasting with a superior digital service, notably HD. The second wave is intended to more fully exploit the capabilities inherent with digital broadcasting, focusing on next-generation services. The DTV transition is clearly moving into high gear. In 6 months, we won't be talking about the transition because we will have transitioned. And there is a very bright future for over-the-air terrestrial television. This, we believe. I invite you to join, visit the ATSC website. I invite you to join ATSC, too, if you're not a member. Visit the ATSC website, and you'll find their standards. You'll find recommended practices. You'll find informational documents. The implementation subcommittee developed over the years a number of reports. They were called IS findings. Some interesting information there on issues such as lip sync and data broadcast and so forth. You can always contact me if you have any questions. So that's ATSC and what we're doing these days. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Jerry, I was recently out researching an HD TV set and was disappointed to find that none of them seemed to incorporate the PSET program guides function or feature. Do you have any insight into that?
I not being in the, I mean, ATSC has the consumer electronic companies as members, but I don't have, I can't bring any useful, you know, input to the table on that. You know, their CEA has various initiatives underway with regard to aspects of digital television, but I'm just not familiar with them. It's not my realm. Having said that, I think the broadcaster, one of the things that I think drives will continue to drive program guides based on PSIP are broadcasters doing PSIP right and actually having useful information in there as opposed to movie of the week, you know, something that that is compelling.
Yeah, my question is similar to his. Is getting the consumer electronics industry to produce devices, we can make all the standards and we want to, for all kinds of neat little things, but to get the boxes out there to do the things, because as broadcasters, we're at a deficit compared to the other media. I mean, DirecTV and stuff, they control the box. We don't have any control over the manufacture of the boxes or distribution or anything, so it puts us at a pretty significant deficit there.
Well, yeah, we have a more complex arrangement. And certainly from the standpoint of a cable company where they control where a box is involved, or a satellite company for sure, or a cable company where a box is involved in the consumer's home, they control both ends of it. And if they want to change, then obviously there's a big capital issue there, but they can change both sides. I mean, they have that option, you know, if it's in their, it's in their economic interest to do so. Broadcasters is a little more complicated, and we need to be creative with regard to evolving our services. And having said all that, with a slightly more complex food chain, if you will, that the broadcast community has, I think it's safe to say that the progress of rolling out digital television on the consumer side has been phenomenal. So, I thought I heard Gary Shapiro last week say that 120 million ATSC DTV receivers in the market. I mean, that is amazing. Now, that gives us a certain, us being broadcasters in ATSC, a certain responsibility to make sure that, okay, we've got this huge installed base. Now, we got to preserve that while at the same time migrating. And we have we have considerable flexibility, as demonstrated by the fact that ATSC DTV was never designed to be a mobile service. I mean, it was designed for the living room. And it does a great job of that. But we found ways, we being some very smart people, have found ways to overlay a new service in a backward compatible way, ATSC-MH. So, I mean, there's that service uses new codecs, more efficient codecs. And so there are ways to get around that element. But you're absolutely right. It does require, it requires cooperation from the broadcast community, the production community, the receiver community, and then the vendors that supply to all of those guys. And I think that's one of the reasons that people come to ATSC as members, because we've got that whole universe of interests. So it complicates our work, but by the same means, I think it drives us to work smarter. And I think we've been able to demonstrate that we can still make new technologies available without disturbing the legacy that we have.
Speaking about the mobile and handheld services, I'm not looking for a specific number, but in what's been published so far, is there an idea of how many bits this is going to cost us?
Mr. Lupo may be able to talk about that in the paper this afternoon. As I said in the one slide, one of the key design parameters was stations need to be able to do HD and a mobile service. Okay.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you very much.